Due to the graphic nature of this program, listener discretion is advised.
To the west of the great continent of Kern lies the island provinces of Perth, home to brave seafarers, exotic pleasures, storms of swirling magical energy, and cults dedicated to the old gods. Upon these white sands came the Eve's Watch, a band of sellswords and brutes seeking their fortune upon the shores of these lands. Let me tell you of this age of legends, for I and I alone am keeper of their saga. This is their chronicle.
The camp is littered with the bodies of mosquitoes. Lovac and Tuco are standing amidst the gore and goo of the mosquitoes that were sleeping but are now stomped flat into the ground. Tuco does a little two-step dance and slips, catches himself, which sends Lovac into a fit of laughter so extreme that he ends up in a coughing fit, which causes Tuco to start laughing, clutching at his chest and at his belly. It's quite a display. First watch is over.
What about the smoke?
The smoke is still hanging in the air, though not as densely as it was before. It's beginning to dissipate.
But was it a smoke bomb or a poison smoke
bomb? Oh, it was a smoke bomb.
Okay, phew.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, Ku goes around and surgically removes all of the proboscis so people aren't just grabbing them out.
Shin, do you still have all of these sticking out of you?
No, they were removed. Oh. Our surgeon is wandering around removing them all from us, yelling at us to not take them on ourselves.
And Jill had a couple.
Hey, you took those out. First one.
Oh, it was just one?
No, you were the first one to take them out. I had two in me, I think.
And I also had one, which I would allow you to remove.
And then I know some people may have wanted to harvest the proboscises.
Tuco already checked them for poison and found no poison presence.
But the proboscises could be used for like darts or something, maybe.
How big were they?
I will take several for alchemical funnels.
Okay, so pencil size, not arm size?
No.
Yeah, no, not me.
And then we can just pitch the dead mosquitoes over the cliff. Unless somebody wanted to try and eat them.
In a pate.
I think we can pitch them. That's not to draw scavengers here.
What about Giel's net?
He's just going to turn it inside out. He's going to flip it over. He's going to be fine.
I'll shake out the bits and pieces that are left in there.
I do want to point
swing
out.
Swing around above my head to let the goo kind of flick out of between the meshing. And then hand it back to him.
I do want to point out, with a stinger like this, I think our mosquito net is useless.
It's a fair assessment.
It worked so far.
Yeah, it looks it.
Ku, who is on third watch, will head back to his hammock to try and get a couple hours of sleep.
I'll hand Giel back his.
Tuco on second watch is now up and ready.
Moulet will return to his slumber.
Giel will too, and he'll cover himself up in the net.
So drippy.
I spin dried it.
So drippy.
On this second watch, Tuco is curious, how far away is that large stone that the figure was reclined against?
Is there a center point to the camp? You guys aren't.
We're at the,
you don't have
we're
a
at the
fire,
woods edge.
Right?
No fire.
It's a pretty broad area, but it's a short walk. Your camp is going to be in sight at all times.
More than 30 feet?
About 30 feet.
Okay. Tuco will spend his guard duty squatting atop the rock, scanning the area, scanning the woods behind our camp, as to make a profile of himself to draw any enemy.
Perch yourself upon your rock. And Shin, are you on watch?
Shin is on watch, but Shin is tending to a creation with his alchemical supplies and trying to not move around as much for the next 8 hours.
You have a sufficient amount of moonlight that you think, as long as you're not making anything particularly dangerous, which requires a lot of precision and care, it's easy enough for you to accomplish. You're sitting on your bedroll, so you're off the ground and somewhat comfortable. And your hour of watch?
2 hours.
Two hours of watch. Goes uneventful. You can hear the crashing of the waves far, far down below. It's fairly soothing. And soon you find yourself coming to the end of your watch.
Third watch was Ku. So Tuco rouses Ku and comments to Shin on his way by. Now that's how you do watch.
Ku will make his way to the rock that Tuco was at because it's with the back to the cliff and what moonlight is there, because Ku doesn't have dark vision, so he can have look forward in one direction, not really worry about anything coming up behind him, and have his short bow out and ready with an arrow knocked off to the side and just sit and wait and watch.
It's a much cooler night than the past few nights, which is welcoming. It's calm. You can hear the sounds of the jungle, but it goes uneventfully. The only struggles you have, Ku, that is, certainly not Shin, is staying awake after the battle with the mosquitoes. You're tired, muscles are sore, and the rock, this big rock that the cairn of the warrior is built up against, is surprisingly comfortable after such rigorous physical activity.
Before going to bed and waking up the fourth watch, which is Mule, Ku will check in on Shin to see what he's up to. What you working on?
I'm working on an anti-venom.
Okay. We did get some anti-venom from the queen.
I'm using my time.
Okay. Yeah, you've got plenty.
As long as I can do it, we might as well do it.
Do you need any help with anything?
Not with this part. It's just slowly mixing and gelling. Once it ages a little, it ought to be okay.
I will peruse my herbalism kit and provide any herbs that might assist with an anti-venom and give them to Shin and instruct on how to use them. When you get a chance, talk to Tuco as well.
Oh, yes. I plan on, once we get some downtime, the three of us should get together and see what we can come up with.
Then Ku will make his way off and wake up Mule and head to his hammock.
That time already, huh? All right. I will rise, go off to find Shin.
Not that far away, sitting on his bedroll for once.
No one woke me, so I assume watch is clear so far since the barrage of...
Yeah, nothing new.
What you up to?
Oh, just putting my time to good use.
Right, just mind the trees. Keep an eye. I will walk my watch. I will pause, you know, every probably 15 minutes or so against the rock, but I'm not going to sit. Being up and walking is therapeutic. I expect I'll be walking a lot in the next few days, but I don't want to risk sleeping. I am also finding the sounds of the jungle to be quite relaxing. They don't put me on edge as much as they seem to do some of my companions. I don't want to drift off into reminiscence or anything that might dull my senses.
It is particularly challenging on these watches to not reflect on past experiences. Pacing and walking the perimeter of the camp seems to help a little bit, diverting your mind from that. Those past experiences, listening to the sounds of the jungle is calming. You can put your focus on those insect sounds, the sounds of the frogs and toads and other chittering animals somewhere out there in the jungle. The eye shine from various animals looking in on the camp, but not quite being brave enough to approach it, even though there isn't a fire. As you're strolling around the perimeter of the camp, Mule, you check in on Ku occasionally. He's known to have very restless sleep, and you can see him beginning to roll over and adjust his positioning, and then it almost looks as though he's running. His legs are kind of jerking and his feet are flexing, and he begins to mumble in a language you're unfamiliar with.
I'll approach him carefully and just put a gentle hand on his shoulder and shake him just very gently and say, "It's okay."
He responds to you, or responds to somebody in his dream, and rolls over again, seeming to become comfortable, and then moments later begins to become active again.
I'm going to tighten my circle and stay. I'm going to stay close by him. If he starts to, the activity doesn't bother me, but I don't want him to cry out.
And that's something you would all be aware of.
Without any pretense, usually? Yeah. Okay. Much as I prefer not to interrupt his rest, I am going to shake him more vigorously to wake him.
He sits bolt upright. He's got a look on his face. Like his body says he's awake, but his face says he's still asleep.
I will say, "Kusen Holt," and see if it wakes him.
And he'll mumble something back at you, but it's unintelligible. A low mumble, different language that you haven't heard before. You've heard him speak the language, but you've never heard it spoken anywhere else other than bedchambers or bedroll at a camp.
More sharply, "Ku."
And then he lets out like a high-pitched shriek.
I want to clamp my hand over his mouth.
He begins struggling, grabbing at your wrists, kicking his legs.
"Ku, wake up."
"Monk." Just like, you know.
Yeah, I may take
those reflexes.
I may take some damage here.
Anyone else in the party roused by the shriek?
Yeah, Shin.
Shin is paying attention, but it doesn't seem to need any interference yet.
Ku, you feel yourself being shook. Numerous hands grabbing at you. Small, tiny hands, much like your own. And you begin tossing these people aside that are close to your height. There's a violent altercation. They're calling out your name, almost pleading with you. And then you find yourself in darkness, staring into the face of Moulay. You have your hand around his neck.
Starts off like that startle and squeezing, and then realizing it's Moulay, and Ku relaxes his grip and brings his arm down. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Out of the corner of your eye, you see Lovak with his hand on the hilt of his sword and Tuco staring at you. Jill is snoring soundly. And Shin looked from across the camp, looking at you, specifically your hand on around Moulay's neck.
Sorry, it was a bad dream. Some crazy engineering with a firearm and some bouquet of roses.
Enough to scare the daylights out of anyone.
Yes.
You're okay now?
I'm okay now, thank you. And Ku will try to go back to sleep, but he never will. He'll lay in his hammock for a while, but then get up and just relax until morning.
Well, Lovak is up. How close am I to the end of my watch at this point?
You're at the halfway point. Tuco?
Go back to sleep, Lovak. You still got an hour.
Thank you.
Tuco, after being roused by a small screech, realized that we are in Moulay's watch, and he wanted to talk to Moulay anyway. So he's going to take this opportunity once everybody else settles back down to get up, because he's just laying there in leathers. He's not. It's too hot for covers. And approach Moulay. Hey, you got a minute, man? You want to talk for a second?
I have another hour. So
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, cool. And he's looking around, and he sees Shin over there. How far away are we from Shin?
What, like 30 feet, probably?
Yeah,
30 feet. So
the most.
A low whisper is not going to carry that far, especially with jungle sounds. So today, when we're fighting mosquitoes, I've seen you do some weird stuff. You turned into, like, something wholly different. What's going on there, man?
Frustrations.
Is that, like, a spell? What is that?
It's a spell.
It's a spell. You turn into any other crazy monsters?
No. You've seen me use it before. I usually prefer to bite. But I did not think that biting would be very tasty here.
Right. Yeah, I agree. They did not look tasty.
But there was the need to brutalize something. I think you can understand that.
You in control of that?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Because that was pretty freaking scary, man. I got a strong stomach. That was creepy. All right, just wanted to make sure we're all under control here.
So far.
So far? So far?
Sleep well, Tuco.
But you can't leave it like so far. What does that mean, so far?
The future is not written.
Jeez, that's a frustrating way to end a conversation. Well, whatever, man. I'm going to keep my distance a little bit. See you, dude. And Tuco returns to his sleeping mat.
The rest of your watch goes uneventful. You glance over at Ku occasionally. He's motionless, but he's awake, staring off or up, you know, at the sky.
I will wake Lovak.
When you head over to Lovak, he's already awake. He's crouched on the ground. He's in his armor. As you start looking for him initially, can't quite see him until he actually moves. Almost like he shed darkness. So it's almost like the night, the shadows, the darkness were drawn to it until he moves.
Looking a little dimmer than usual.
It's been an exciting night.
Are things okay with you?
I don't think they could possibly be any better.
Saw a side of you tonight I'm not used to seeing.
When you were a child and you went down into the cellar or out to the shed during the evening, as you're heading back to the house, there's that creepy little feeling, almost like something's watching you.
Oh, yes.
Almost like something's following you.
Daily occurrence.
And your pace picks up just a little bit, and you think, well, there's nothing really there in the dark. That's me.
Something to ponder on.
Well, I'll take shift.
Safe watch. I will return to my somewhat unfitful slumber.
Yeah, have a good sleep after that conversation.
It's just going around, isn't it?
Yeah, you and Tuco are next to each other. I got one eye on you. I'm not sleeping. You got one eye on the guard.
I will most likely pass my last 2 hours in a sort of meditation, so unaware of my surroundings, but not really sleeping.
I'll stroll over to Shin, give him a nod. I'll let you watch the field. I'll be in the tree line. Grab my spear and take up a position just inside the tree line, just past where we're staying, or where we're camped.
Past the little alarm system that was set up?
Yep, just outside of it.
Lovak moves past the strings with the bells, stepping gingerly over them, and doesn't so much enter the jungle as he kind of fades into it.
Once Lovak gets up, and maybe when first light happens, Ku will get up, he'll pack up his hammock, he'll wait for it to get light enough out to break open his herbalism kit, and he's going to make more of those refreshing tonics, as many as he can make for the journey, especially for Giel and everyone else. Once he's done with that, and it's light enough out, he's going to scan the area for any herbs and fruits that he knows would be useful.
Just before first light, as you're staring up into the sky, just as the stars begin to wink out of existence, you see a large black shape pass overhead, very, very high up in the sky.
I'm going to go to Shin, ask for the spyglass, and grab it and run back and see if I can see what that was.
As you cast your gaze skyward with the spyglass, you see the large black shape is shaped like a man, but much, much larger. Great leathery black wings come from its back, and it appears to be gliding. Every now and again, they will flap, curling in almost around the form, and it'll circle wide around the camp in the jungle, and then will...
Does it look like it's aware of us?
It's hard to tell. It looks like it's circling your area, your camp.
Does Ku recognize it from the city?
It looks like the same shape that abducted the Princess Jewel.
Ku will alert Lovak and Shin. Not the whole camp, but just like a whistle or something to get their attention.
There's a quick, almost chirping whistle from Ku. You've heard it countless times before.
I'll work back out to the edge of the forest, scan the field, and see if I can spot where Ku is standing.
And Ku will, once he sees Lovak approaching, he'll hand over the spyglass and point in the direction that the being is.
Do what I can to bring it into focus. And
it is just as described earlier, has the same... Mm-hmm. Same silhouette as the creature that abducted the princess.
Approximately, what is its range? How far up is it?
It's hundreds of feet up.
How many hundreds?
250. It's up in the clouds and dips out of the clouds and comes back down, circling around the camp.
What's the range of a short bow?
320 is your long range, I think. I'm pretty sure it's 60 short, 320 long. So if you shot, you'd be at disadvantage. Or 80, it's 80 short, 320 long.
Think we should take a shot at it?
No, because it might be looking. It may not really think we're here. Something might be catching its eye. Might be Shin sitting over by the rock. But we're just basically sitting here on the edge of the forest, partially covered. Let's just stay still and see if it passes.
Okay. It's circled a few times.
If it's circled a few times, then it's probably trying to decide whether there's something to even investigate.
Shimcone's wandering over, looking up at the spot that you were just pushing
at. I'm going to motion you to stay still.
Okay. I'll stop mid-stride, but my head goes on a pivot.
Point up, and the symbol of the we're being watched.
I'll start scanning. I don't expect to see anything other than like a little speck of black, but...
I mean, if it's only 200 feet in the air, you'd see it pretty well.
Yeah, it's large. You know, you can definitely make out its size, guesstimate its size, and its shape.
As slowly as possible, I'm going to bring out my crossbow and make sure it's loaded, and then just continue standing there.
We're just going to watch it and see if it keeps circling. And
it circles one more time, dips up and into the clouds, and then you don't see it again. The sun begins to creep up over the horizon, and there is almost like an electricity in the air. There's a red aura.
Like electricity, like you can smell like the static and you know a storm's coming?
Yes.
Okay. The ozone.
You know that ozone scent. From where you are in that broad clearing that's on the side of the cliff, you can see the jagged bottoms of the skylands that are throughout the Perthan Islands and this particular stretch of ocean. There's swirling, crimson, magical energy that whirls around the bases of these massive floating chunks of rock. The swirling energy looks like it's pulsing, and it's a deeper color red than it was when you first entered Maaz Shapur on that ship that Kushim transported you across the ocean on.
Once the potential danger has passed and the light has come up, Ku will again, like I stated, he's going to go to his herbalism kit and start making the refreshing tonics for the party, as many as he can, and then he's going to look around the area that we're in and the not too deep into the woods for any kind of herbs or fruits that will be useful, whether for it being edible or medicinal.
The jungle is probably the largest produce section you've ever entered. For an herbalist, it's rife for the picking. You harvest a good number of herbs that you have no immediate need for, some that you do have an immediate need for. The fruits here are a little different than what you're used to. You can give me a survival roll if you want to see if you can find some edible ones. With your herbalist kit, I'll give you a bonus of plus one.
21.
You find some of those large, round, bitter fruits that you've had a few times for your breakfasts when you were in Majshapur. Those are, they're juicy. Fluid's nice.
How many do I find?
Do you want me to roll or would you rather roll?
Either or.
Way he rolls one, you're going to let him roll?
Find five of those that appear to be the color that you're used to seeing, you know, on the platters in the morning.
Then I will gather the five and let's see, so there's six of us and no offense to Shin, I'm going to give one to everybody except for Shin because I know he doesn't eat.
Did you happen to run across any fresh water in your preambulations?
Did I?
There's several large, broad leaves on many different plants that there's some pooled water collected in. There's some insects floating in it and the whatnot, but it is cool, potentially refreshing.
I will collect water skins and fill the water skins as carefully as possible and making sure that for Geel, as many of the nice little chunks are in it as possible.
Every little protein source.
You're able to fill the water skins with ease.
Granted, I have like a small water skin. He's got a huge water skin.
Yeah, that one's tricky to lug around after it's full. It's quite large. And you're able to refresh yourself with some water, you know, while you're doing so, brushing the bugs aside if you so choose.
For everybody but Geel.
For everybody but Geel.
Yeah, the Geel's getting all the bugs, I find.
And soon you return to camp. People are beginning to move about, stretch. Tuco's urinating over the cliff, chuckling to himself.
There's no wind blowback?
There's a little, and he doesn't care.
Everybody but Shin gets a fruit. Would you want a refreshing tonic, or do you not care about that, Shin?
Nope.
Okay. So then, however many of those tonics Ku was able to make, he'll divide them. Geel will get more because he's bigger. Lovak, because he's in armor, will get more. How many did I make?
Seven.
Tuco does not need one. Tuco was raised in the desert, so permanent dehydration is my regular state.
Tuco's going to get one. Geel and Lovak are going to get two apiece, and myself and Mule will get one each. And then, along with the fruit and making sure everybody gets their water skin back, letting people know storm's coming. From when we got provisions from the queen, did she include any oil-covered cloaks?
Yes.
Excellent. I'll make sure everybody has their appropriate cloak.
These cloaks are of a lighter material. You were told by her provisioner that they are oiled and should protect you from the water. You've used them a few times. You usually get afternoon showers in the jungle. The canopy provided a great deal of protection from the rain. You weren't necessarily drenched from rain, but certainly from sweat. There's a lot of boots hanging upside down on sticks jabbed into the earth to dry out the insides of them.
While everyone's preparing, since I was already on watch, I would have taken my stuff down pretty quickly. And I'm just going to sit there with a stone and start rubbing off the rust from the blade that I found to keep myself occupied while I'm waiting for everyone else.
And once we're all down to breakfast and eating, then Ku will inform Mule, Geel, and Tuco about the flying man and how we're pretty certain it's the same one that took the princess.
Do you think that it saw us?
Yes, I think so.
I feel like it's likely if it was that low. I mean, we're in the open here, so.
Well, it's seen some. Some were camped just inside the woods.
Well, there goes the element of surprise.
I mean, there's a couple out in the field. They may not know our exact numbers, but they know there's somebody out here. Doesn't help that there was a large booming sound and magical lights flashing in the middle of the night that they may or may not have seen from the building, but
I doubt they saw from the building. Aren't we still pretty far from the keep at this point?
Yes, you are.
I mean, the boom would have went out across the water a great distance, but once it got to the trees would have blocked a lot of that.
Yeah, and just from a spell perspective, it's 300 feet.
I'm thinking that a powerful magic user is going to have enough intelligence to realize, I just captured a princess. There's a strange new party in my woods. They might just be traveling through, but probably not. So.
Well, I never believed in the pretense of a surprise element.
Well, okay, but sure now. I was hoping for a little sneaking, but.
We got this far.
There'll still be time for sneaking.
I would have liked to get a little closer and let the alarm start at the bridge, but well, okay.
When we get to our next observation point, you said there was another tree soon, right?
Yes.
Then maybe we can see if there's another approach other than the main front bridge.
Well, didn't we kind of go off course getting to here?
Yes, a little bit. They may know we're here. They don't know exactly what direction we're coming from, how many we might be.
Probably best not to walk in a straight line directly from here to there.
I doubt, because the jungle will be able
it's
to walk in a straight
line. It's not going to be a straight line.
But you know how we've been using our compass ball, our directional ball, to go in a straight line.
Well,
maybe
that,
we can...
That helps us stay our course. Well,
think about it. All right, look, I don't have a plan, folks. I'm just spitballing here, right? I don't know what I'm doing.
When we reach our next vantage point, we'll be able to better see our approach.
Okay. Yeah.
Or plan for our approach. And I agree. Not going. I would also prefer not to go in the front door.
Otherwise, we might as well get like a banner.
Hi.
All right, cool.
You want me to break out the Eveswatch battle banner?
No. No, that was sarcasm.
He brought it with him all this way.
Just in case.
Just in case.
Tuco's packing out.
Before we depart, I'm going to call on the power of nature and cast Druidcraft. Now a small orc appears. It predicts the weather for the next 24 hours. Does it show that the storm will start
in
the next day? A little orb appears with thunder clouds and little bolts of lightning and rain.
Is it as reliable as the weathermen of the modern age?
More so.
More so. Yeah. Well, that's refreshing.
Yeah.
Cool, pack up his belongings.
Jay will also
definitely
pack up his
definitely stuff. A storm sometime today.
And also collect the stuff from the bell trap.
That means it's going to cool off.
Hey, thanks for the water, crew.
Potentially. It may cool off, but it's also going to get more moist in the air, if that's possible.
Have you seen me lately?
I think he's contributing
every day
to the moisture in the air.
You do seem moist.
Moulet, your druid craft orb shows dense black clouds, streaks of lightning, and a reddish hue. You've never seen that on there. It looks to be a pretty substantial storm that's coming.
Yeah, this is going to be a big one.
Can we all see what's in the orb or just him?
No, everybody can see it.
Is that the same color as is in the sky, that red?
Yes.
Over by the island? What are the chances the island influences the weather?
I feel like it's likely that whatever preparations are taking place is going to affect this.
I agree. I think it's something they're doing up at that castle with this ritual thing. This is not a natural storm. Is my completely uneducated opinion.
It's natural coming in, but I think it's going to be enhanced by whatever machinations, whatever magic is taking place.
Can we use this to our advantage?
It would certainly cover our approach.
We don't know how long it's going to last.
Correct.
We don't know how far we're out we are.
Well, exactly.
Maybe.
If the timing intersects, yes, it could.
Shin, you read that journal that had the procedures for the ceremony involving the princess? What was the culmination of it? Was it like an eclipse, a magical storm from the islands? Do you recall?
The culmination was that somehow the princess survives this ordeal. The mage gets what he wants.
About the princess bearing some
child? She'll come out pregnant.
Then with an old god.
The whole gotta get her pregnant thing.
Well,
so
yeah, one
is,
would assume.
Is that maybe the culmination of what might be going on around here? I mean, you guys are the casters. I'm just seeing
arcane
the same color
roll
there as I'm seeing in the sky.
That's fine.
I'm just trying to put one and one together and get three.
Yep. Arcane roll?
I would say an arcane roll.
One, so it doesn't matter.
17.
Shin shrugs.
I don't know anything about weather, man.
17 for me.
You know of a lot of bizarre old rituals, particularly from your history and where you grew up. And these are usually held at specific times of the year, seasonal changes where the days grow longer or the days grow shorter, or with a blood moon, particularly with the more nefarious acts.
Like we have seen these last few nights.
Yes, which is unusual because the blood moon doesn't last days as it has. The moon last night was that same crimson color as it has been past couple days.
I will relay this information to my group. It seems like this is affecting even the celestial bodies, the moon itself. You've noticed that red color. This doesn't. Blood moon is usually just one night and then it's done. It's been at least two nights now.
And of note, there are two moons on Hymirin, and both.
Exceedingly rare.
So that'd be a yes.
Yes, Lobeck.
You see a great look of concern on Tuco's face as he addresses Moulet. You know, I'm used to assassinating, like, merchants and even once in a while a prince. But blood moons and big storms, I'm starting to feel a little out of my depth here. Are we sure we don't need more help on this job?
Think about the reputation boost when we kill an old god.
Remember, we are the Age Watch.
Yeah. But there's seven of us.
Six.
Yeah. Six. I can't even count. Right? It's crazy. And I'm supposed to fight a god?
No. Giel and I are supposed to fight a god. You're supposed to take care of things when while we're doing so.
Oh, well, okay. As long as you two are going to take care of it.
Ideally, we stop this before any gods appear.
I guess we better hurry then, right?
Yeah. So yeah. Why are we standing around?
Let us not tarry. Let us maybe double time even.
Yes. Why don't we take a straight line to go?
Shit, after you.
All this talk, I want to say I remember hearing this ballad or poem or something. It involved a princess, a blood moon, an elf in green, and a legendary sword.
I'm not familiar with that story.
Perhaps more of it will come to you as we traverse the jungle.
The new season of Roll Gay Roleplay uncovers the mysteries of Soul Quest City. This comedy fiction story follows four detectives. Bay.
Let's go kill somebody.
Linspector St. Tit.
Obviously, I am a man of sophisticated cigarette taste.
Rux Baldacchino.
Hey, did you say atthog? Make sure they're, like, regular atthogs, no ketchup.
And Zastasha Felzar.
Hashtag live, laugh, love. Hashtag tentacle. Hashtag bailing you out.
As they search for clues and unlock secrets, one client at a time. Season 5 of Roll Gay Roleplay is available now on your preferred podcast platform.
As you depart your camp, Shin raises one finger, and you do recall, Shin, that this wouldn't be what you would call a conventional pregnancy, one that occurs by the means you're all familiar with. This is strictly a magical ritual, almost a divine conception, if you will.
Or a non-divine conception.
Probably more accurately said, yes.
The divine comes in all colors and flavors.
Chocolate?
Probably.
Strawberry.
Who would want that?
Durian?
That's the chaotic neutral flavor.
And you file into the jungle just as the oppressive heat begins.
I'm eating my fruit, drinking some water.
Your water has a lot of floaty bits in it.
I can't see them.
At one point in time, Giel picks a large multi-legged animal out of his tongue and flicks it aside.
I think that one was still alive.
Sampling the local wildlife, Giel?
Yeah.
Cool, where exactly did you get the water?
Off of leaves.
It does a body good.
I've okay. seen him eat worse.
So as we're going, instead of using my water, if we happen to be going by some broad leaves as he instructs, I will see. I'll drink that water instead.
There's a lot of it at this time of the morning.
Okay.
Many of the leaves are almost cup or bowl shaped.
Would you say that because they've been sitting in the water, they would almost have like a tea-like flavor? The water's been sitting in the leaves.
It would have a very vegetative state, you know, like it was soaking.
It's got some chlorophyll in it.
Yeah, and cut grass. Not great, but it's it serves water. The
purpose. Not bad either.
That's right. Yeah, it's hydrating. So, yeah, I'll follow Lovac's lead. It's a good idea. Drink from the leaves until we can no longer, because water is precious here.
Well, after I see that, I'm going to refill my skin up.
Giel doesn't seem to care. He chooses water happily. As he maneuvers through the narrow jungle trails, going sideways for quite a bit in many places. You're bringing up the rear, correct, Giel?
No.
Yeah.
No, Tuco is. I'm before.
While Tuco is bringing up the rear, he's doing his best to conceal our tracks. He's not doing a great job because we're moving at pace, but he's got like a few broke leaves and he's kind of shuffling over the tracks. They're not really concealing Giel's tracks very well, but...
As Giel passes through the jungle trail, he moves with his girth alone, he's moving aside branches, but they come snapping back at you. So there's a constant dodging of...
I drop back 15 feet.
Do I notice that Tuco is trying to cover the tracks?
Yes.
I wouldn't worry about that because... According to Mule, there's going to be a storm coming that's going to be so severe that it's just going to wash away our tracks.
Could be. Yeah,
save your energy. We need it for a confrontation before this day is done.
Tuco nods and smiles. Yeah, yeah, okay. And continues to do it anyway.
Shin, you're up in the lead, correct?
Correct.
Tell me what you're doing while you're walking the trail.
I am every couple of 100 paces now that we're into super dense jungle, making sure we're heading in the general direction. Because I assume we're going to be doing a zigzag path.
Yeah, you are.
Because I don't want to machete through these trees. In between that, scanning out for anything that's out of the ordinary, really. I'm not really a jungle person.
So you're checking this orb of direction you have periodically.
Yes.
Yeah. You feel like you must be getting close to that one large tree that you spied when you climbed up that first big tree. It's late morning by this time. The going is slow. You're all starting to get a little fatigued. Jill is complaining fiercely about the heat and is stopping at every leaf he can find, even that has a drop of water. He's licking leaves, but you feel as though you must be getting close.
I will pass down the line to start watching out on the sides because I don't think we can hit this tree exactly. So start looking for something that's above the canopy.
If he's licking leaves, I'm paying attention to what he's going to potentially lick and tell him, no, not that one. Yes, that one. Don't need him in a hallucinatory fit, suddenly going into a rage.
Or a case of the trots.
Or that.
Poison ivy tongue.
The last thing you want is for your giant to have the shits during combat. In time, you find what you think is the tree. Of course, you know that it's not going to be the exact tree. Chances are good that there's no way you're going to find it, but you feel as though this is about where you would be. There's several large trees that climb a little higher than the rest of the canopy.
And I will ask for the spyglass back.
Ku will hand back the spyglass.
And I'll be back down in a couple seconds.
I'll take a look around. I'll kind of patrol low back. Why don't we patrol out here?
I was thinking the same.
Cool. Aren't you going to follow him?
You take the left flank. I'll take the right.
Gio's getting in position on his knees with his hands like this.
You know what? I will follow. Because I have slow fall now.
You're going to launch him?
I'm going to aim for part of the tree where I think he can grab, and I'm just going to shoot him straight up. Get more leverage. Going this way. One, two.
All right.
It's true. He can use his legs and his back to...
So you plant one tiny boot into Giel's meaty hands.
Well, actually, wouldn't I be able to fit both my boots in his hands?
Probably. You could probably sit down.
Yeah. Probably, yeah. And pack off all my stuff off.
Which roll?
15, and with strength, it'd be 18.
And then acrobatics.
Oh,
that's a 5.
You can re-roll the ones, but you can't re-roll the 2s.
Just for the record, the DM was laughing right there.
Giel squats really, really low. So low that his butt is almost touching the jungle floor, and he explodes in an upward motion, again leaving the ground, this time even higher than he did when the last time he launched you up the tree, and you rocket skyward almost perfectly towards this nice big branch, and you go by it and up into the tree. From where you're standing, Jill, you're pretty satisfied with the launch.
Yes.
Yep. Even does a fist pump in the air, looks around at everybody for approval with a big smile on his face, and then Ku emerges from the canopy, past the branch, grasping for it, arms flailing wildly, a yelp being uttered as he starts to fall back towards the jungle floor.
Uh-oh. And I prep to catch him.
On your way down, you see Giel's broad smile. And then a look of great concern, and he rushes over to the tree and holds his arms out as if he was going to carry you across the threshold. What are you going to do other than fall?
Is there any branches I could potentially catch on the way down?
You're snatching branches wildly, and they're snapping, slowing you.
Approximately how far up in the air am I?
You went about 30 feet in the air.
Okay, I'm going to try to control my fall and come down where, not away from Giel.
Not away from Jim.
Away from Jim.
Make a roll. Well, how does your slow fall become active?
Try to control my body movement. Stop flailing for branches. My roll is a 12, acrobatics.
As you're falling, and Jill's running about, trying to get underneath you, you hit a section of the trunk that's really thick as it tapers downward kind of towards the jungle floor. Almost ride it the rest of the way down using the heels of your boots as a brake and your palms.
No, go ahead and roll damage. D6s.
I was reaching for a D10. 8 points of damage.
No damage. Slow fall.
You just wanted to see me roll. So you ride the...
I wanted to show off my ability.
That's fair. You ride the trunk down.
So while all this is going on, Lovac and I are encircling the tree just to look out for danger that doesn't come from falling out of a tree. I'm going to try and tap into my survival instincts, not closing my eyes, but really knowing that in a jungle this thick that my eyes are not going to be my best thing to use. So I'm going to listen and try and tap into those feelings, you know, the feeling of being hunted or being watched. Will you allow me to roll survival instead of perception?
Yeah, go right ahead.
That's a 24.
You always kind of feel like a potential food source while you're in the jungle. there is an ever-present feeling of being watched. But this is a different feeling. It's not a feeling like that time when you were in the woods as a boy, where you knew you were hunted, and you knew you were lost, and there was that terror of being alone, and then almost suddenly being in a new place, new faces you've never seen before. This is different. This is something more concerning than a hungry animal or a stinging insect or a poisonous plant.
Something intelligent.
Yes. Observing, watching.
I'm looking around. This is boring as shit. There's nothing out here.
Lobeck.
Yes?
Something watches us. It's not a beast. Something intelligent watches us. I can't pinpoint. I can't deny this feeling. I've been hunted before by many things. This is not a beast. Be ready.
Well, usually I'm the one doing the hunting, but yeah, I'll keep out. I'm going to pay more attention to 10, 20 feet up into the canopy as opposed to down on the ground. The ground's so thick that no one's going to say anything. So if we're being watched, it has to be from a height. That's where I would be. So that's where I'm going to concentrate my attentions.
Lobeck begins scanning the trees, the dense canopy above.
Ku is going to look to Jiel to make another attempt up.
Shin, you make it to the top. You have not yet felt the touch of Ku's mind to yours. You take out the spyglass, check the directional orb, and begin scanning the mountaintop jungle for the key. In time you find it, you zoom in, you get a little more detail this time. The tree you're in isn't as tall as the last one, but it does grow beyond the rest of the canopy. There's a few tall trees like this that you see scattered about the jungle, crawling up the sides of the mountain, and some even around where the stone bridge to the keep is. On the bridge are many more of these guards, far more than there were before. They're posted at stationary posts at the beginning of the bridge, at the end of the bridge, and there's a patrol 4 deep walking the length of the bridge back and forth. These humanoid things are reptilian in appearance. They are armored in leather armor. You've never seen anything like this before. You've encountered lizard folk in your travel and you've fought them. They're known to be fierce warriors, but these look differently. They're not dragon-like in appearance. They are very reptilian, almost snake-like in their appearance, but they have limbs, arms, legs, and tails.
Okay, estimated time for us to reach the keep.
It could be days.
It's that far off still.
That far off, and travel through the jungle hasn't been easy. The terrain is somewhat rugged, not somewhat, but is very rugged, and the conditions are unforgiving.
Now that I'm a little closer and I can get a little more detail, I've got everything I need to know from the bridge right now, so I scan up to the keep that looked like it was in disrepair. Does it look like it's in disrepair that's being left alone? Does it look like it's being rebuilt?
It's not being rebuilt. It looks like it's just fallen to disrepair. At some point in time, it looked as though it was attacked. Where the stonework once was, there's some large rocks filling in the gaps in the walls. The embattlements in some areas are almost non-existent. There are some holes in the walls in the upper level of the keep. It doesn't look as though it's being rebuilt.
Okay, if I concentrate specifically on the keep for a while.
With the spyglass?
Yeah, with the spyglass, I'm going to give it a good 5 minutes. Do I see any humanoid type activity on the keep?
There's a great deal of humanoid activity within the keep. It looks like there's a relatively large number of these reptilian, snake-like soldiers there. And just as you're kind of narrowing in on the interior of the keep walls, you are snatched from behind with talon-like hands and are jerked aloft, losing grip on the spyglass. And that's where we'll leave it for this week.
Join us every other week as the Eve's Watch continue their adventures in Perth. Thank you to our patrons. Find us on Patreon to join the executive producers team and support the podcast. Our cast: Bill Robitaille, Louis Aponte, Frank Whedon, Jared Parker, Marcus Holt, Sin Morse, our DM Scott, and me, Nova. Thank you, our listeners, for joining us every other week.